This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, everyone. Hope you're all having a nice, wonderful Tuesday. It is Oscar nominations day, and we have a lot to talk about. I'm Entertainment Weekly's executive editor, Jared Hall. You might know me from our awardist podcast, and hopefully you've been keeping track of all of that all season long. Joining me today is editor-in-chief at Entertainment Weekly, Patrick Gomez. Patrick, are you there?
Hi there.
Glad you're with me. What's funny, I don't know, maybe just to me, not anyone else, is that Patrick and I are both at Sundance. We're at various locations around Park City. We're doing all this, and then we're about to head the road back to Los Angeles. But there is so much to talk about today, Patrick, with these nominations.
It is a weird list, Jared. It is a weird list.
It really is. There are some things that I was really fearful that were going to happen and did happen. One of them I did not expect to happen, but, I want to ease in before we jump right into those things that, just have us so like baffled and scratching our heads. This is a wild number to me. There were 321 feature films eligible this year. And there are 9,341 voting members, of the Academy. So that's how many people we're looking at here. Netflix scored the most nominations with 18, though Disney will tell you they got the most with 20 because of the split between, their Searchlight and Disney proper and all of that. And then Apple got 13, Searchlight, it got 13, Universal 13, Warner Brothers 9, A24 got 7. But in terms of individual films leading the way, Oppenheimer scored the most, which I think was pretty much expected. They got 13. Poor Things got 11. Killers of the Flower Moon scored 10. Barbie got 8. Maestro got 7 nominations. And then American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, and The Zone of Interest all scored 5 nominations. Quite a morning for a lot of those films. So congratulations to all of them. There's a bit of history made for Martin Scorsese. He is now the oldest directing nominee at 81 years old.
Congrats to him.
Indeed. Yeah. And this is his 10th directing nomination, his 16th overall. He has some, best picture nominations as well. And then John Williams, good old John Williams. He just keeps going. He already had the record, for music scoring nominations, but he continues to add to that record. He got his 49th this year. That is his 54th Oscar nomination overall. And that is the most for any living person, but Walt Disney still has the record for 59, which is just, that is a staggering number.
If anyone's going to do it, though, it's going to be him.
We'll see how many scores he can crank out. And then interesting tidbit, thanks to Alam and Johannes, our head of social, for noticing this, people talking about it right here on X, that Issa Rae is in 3 of the nominated films. Barbie and American Fiction are both Best Picture nominees, and then she is also a voice actor in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is a Best Animated Feature nominee. So there's some secret sauce perhaps going on there with Issa. I don't know what it is, but congrats to her.
I mean, she's great in everything that she does, so I'm not surprised. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, 3 in 1 year is quite a feat.
Yeah, that's a really cool accomplishment. All right, well, I guess we can start digging into the nominations. Let's go ahead and start with Best Picture. The nominees are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest. That is quite a good list, and it is a fairly expected list. I think one that's not in there that people, when it first came out, people kind of thought it was going to be in there, but it has died off quite quickly in January, is The Color Purple. We were a little hesitant to call it a snub because of how it dropped off in the past few weeks, though. But did you think there was still a chance for it, Patrick?
I thought so. I mean, it's such a strong cast, but I think it's reflected in the fact that, I mean, I know we're jumping ahead a little, but I think it's reflected in the fact that that it didn't get more nominations in the acting categories as well, that it kind of unfortunately arrived with a little bit of a dud and continues the legacy of The Color Purple not necessarily getting its due at the Oscars, kind of a repeat of the non-musical film. So yes, I wouldn't say I was shocked. But if you'd asked me like 3 or 4 months ago, I would have said, oh yeah, that'll definitely be on the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am right there with you. There was another film that, because of all of the names involved, and once people started seeing this film, there was like, oh, this one, you know, would stand to reason that it will get in, because it's a film directed by Todd Haynes and starring Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore, all previous Oscar winners. And Charles Melton was getting a lot of attention, but May, December did not make the cut. Again, one that I'm not really surprised just because of the way things have gone for that film, as of late. But, and then, you know, Saltburn did not receive any nominations today. I'm not entirely surprised. I thought it might have gotten in on some technical categories, perhaps production design, cinematography. And All of Us Strangers was also completely shut out, which is just absolutely heartbreaking. It truly is one of the best pictures, I think, of 2024 in my top three. I was really hopeful, at least, that Andrew Haig's screenplay would get in. Was really hoping for an Andrew Scott Best Actor nomination. Alas, it's really interesting how some of these campaigns just don't catch on.
Yeah, I mean, look, you and I both are huge Saltburn fans. I think Charles Melton in particular was deserving of May, December. The movie as a whole, I don't know that. I think the parts were better than the sum, in my opinion, of that movie. So I was hoping that Charles was going to get, but there was a lot of people that had the narrative of, oh, these people are going to have their moment and be nominated this year, and then just completely these acting categories, there's just so many people left out, and none of the people that got in are like, they didn't get replaced by anyone that's super shocking, but these lists are not what anyone was anticipating.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's one category where did not make the cut. And I want to jump to that because it is certainly what folks are talking about all over social media. Let's jump to Best Actress, where the nominees are Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Ulla for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Poor Things. The name I did not say is Margot Robbie for Barbie. Which we very much considered a snub today. She landed all kinds of precursor nominations. And this is the one, as I kind of teased at the top of this, that I was really afraid that she was not going to get in, because we knew Ryan Gosling was a lock for supporting actor. And so for Ken to get nominated and Barbie not, it feels a little on the nose, the kind of the whole point, or certainly parts of the point of that film.
I mean, I know we're going to talk about director eventually. So, you know, the nominations here were all over the place. And I will say that obviously when Barbie first came out, I think it was like, oh, like might get Globes, but like maybe not Oscars. And then like as the upswell of just support for this film continued from, you know, and it kind of became this cultural moment, it was suddenly a big contender. But even then, I think if you asked us before all the critics nominations and all of the and the Globes and all of that, I think we all would have said that, oh, the film might get it and Greta definitely will get it, and we'll get to that in a minute. And maybe Ryan, but like Margot, like I don't know. But then all of a sudden she was getting all these awards that I was like, okay, yes, 100% she's a lock. It's shocking to me. I also just like hate that Fantasia Barrino's not in this as well. It's
Greta Lee did not get in.
Oh God, Greta Lee, that one hurts really bad too. Yeah. And I will say, look, I think Lily Gladstone is fantastic, and I've said this to you multiple times. To me, that is a supporting size role. And I think it was a politics thing of like wanting to make sure that she was getting her due for this movie and being pointed as a lead character in it. But again, I think it was a supporting character, a supporting role. I'm so happy that Carey Mulligan's in there. I think to me, that was my favorite lead actress performance of the year, actually. And Emma Stone's fantastic as well. Annette Bening, we'll talk about Naiad, I think more in a minute. It's a great list, but it's lacking by not having, it's such a glaring omission for Margot in particular, but Greta as well.
Yeah, well, and worth noting, by the way, that Margot is a nominee for Best Picture as a producer of Barbie. So yeah, let's talk Best Director, where Greta Gerwig did not make the cut. At least, fortunately, one woman did get in, Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. The rest of the list, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Christopher Nolan, no shocker, Oppenheimer, Yorgos Lanthimos, Poor Things, and then Jonathan Glazer got in for The Zone of Interest. I mean, look, this is a category where I could have seen, in addition to, you know, thinking Greta should have been in there, Celine Song for Past Lives. This is a year I really thought the category could have been dominated by women.
It definitely could have, you know, again, not to take anything away from any of these people nominated here. It's just like, I was speaking to some of our colleagues earlier today, and the discussion came to like, there's so many Best Picture nominees. It just seems rude to have such a limited number of director nominees.
Directors.
Just because it's a little imbalanced. And, you know, obviously we could spend hours discussing the Academy's choices on categories and numbers and all of that. But the other thing I'll say is I mean, I'm sure Bradley is thrilled to be nominated for Best Actor. Again, I keep skipping ahead for us, but I'm sure he's thrilled to be nominated for Best Actor. But I do wonder if he had to choose between the two, if he would have preferred a Best Director nomination. And I'm not saying necessarily that I would place him in it over any of these people, but I just personally have a feeling that he probably was like really hoping for a director nom even more than the acting one.
That's a great point. Because he put so much time and work into that. Got the screenplay nomination though. He was a surprise there. So good on him for that. So as we dive into, let's talk about a few more of the surprises because we were talking about Barbie a bit. America Ferrera, who. She's of course, she's been part of the conversation and kind of looming this whole time ever since, you know, the film came out, mostly because of that big, incredible, scene where she gives it's like a 2-minute speech on being a woman and, you know, what is expected of women. She just, I think, knocked it out of the park with that, but, I know there are a lot of folks who didn't care for that scene as well because they thought it was a little too on the nose. She was picking up some various awards, you know, like honors, I will call them, you know, spotlight awards and even from Critics' Choice, the See Her Award. And so we weren't really sure if she was really going to get the nomination because, you know, those things aren't necessarily voted on by bigger voting bodies. But this morning she made the cut, and a lot of people are really happy to see that happen, especially considering that Margot didn't get in, and Ryan Gosling would have been the sole acting nominee. So where are your feelings on America getting that spot?
Well, you know, she basically got nominated for giving a fantastic speech, and I think giving fantastic speeches or having standout moments at all these award shows where, you know, to your point, the people voting for the winners might not be people voting for Oscars, but the people in the room are voting at the Oscars. I do think the See Her speech that she gave at the Critics' Choice Awards, which was during the nomination voting period, which was the 11th to the 16th. That was on the 14th. So if anyone was holding their ballot and saw her give that speech, I think she, very, I mean, you know, sometimes we have these people come out and just like, Ki Hui Kwan, I think, was one of them that, like, you know, you just kept seeing him. You kept seeing him, I call it give good speech. You kept seeing him give good speech. And I think that there is a major impact there, because if you are like, oh, it's Jennifer Coolidge, the same thing. It's like, if you see them give a good speech, you want to be in the room when they give a good speech again. And so I think, you know, if you're voting, you're like, oh man, I just like not only love their performance, but also love them and want to see them up on that stage to like be entertaining and make or move me. And I think that America did that, even though she wasn't winning awards that were being voted on. She was giving, you know, presenting and doing really well. You know, even if her co-presenters maybe aren't going with the bit as well as she is, you know, but that's her speech as well. I think that her campaign was quieter than a lot of people's, but clearly it worked. And I think it'll be interesting to see all this plays out, because obviously there's Emily Blunt with Oppenheimer, Daniel Brooks, Color Purple, Jodie Foster, Naya Devine, Joy Randolph for the holdovers. I would personally, I mean, God, this category is stacked. I think it's also fantastic to point out that the last time Jodie Foster was nominated in supporting actress, she was 14 years old. Like, that's really cool. Yeah. And to have her back in the category is really fun. This category, God, I think maybe to me the most, even. In terms of just like, I was going to say I had favorites, but I do think it's probably going to go to Devine, and would love that for her. But it is to me, this is the most equal category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's, and especially after a lot of these films, you know, I watched them a second time, and it made it even harder for me to decide who I really felt like I kind of had the edge here. It's just some really incredible work by all these women. I want to talk about another, we're calling him a surprise because, it was a pretty late surge in the season for this person who, certainly gives a really good performance. He's great in everything. Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, getting in there. He got the SAG nomination, you know, some other things, Critics' Choice. And this was the one that I was really like, oh, is he going to get it? But there was, you know, that mounting support. You could feel the love in the industry as, you know, we are at events and talk to people. And there it is. He got in there. The first one announced for that category this morning. He's competing alongside Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, of course, for Barbie, and then Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Mark getting in over Willem Dafoe, which is also interesting because the Academy and actors love Willem Dafoe. So that was one that I was like, it's going to go to either one, but I don't think both will get in. And that's unfortunately what happened. But Robert Downey Jr. has been kind of dominating here as of late. So,
yeah, I mean, I think this is he's definitely the lead contender right now, and we'll see how the campaign goes. I'm surprised with the Mark Ruffalo, and I love Mark Ruffalo so much, not only as an actor, but I just think he's just like such a like nice person and want the best for him. But I am really surprised just because I thought Willem Dafoe's performance was a lot and this is not a dig on Mark Ruffalo. I just thought the character was written with a lot more to do, whereas in Mark's was a lot more like one note. And again, that's not a dig on him as an actor. That's just like the way the parts were written.
The part, yeah.
So I am surprised a little bit there, but I'm thrilled for Sterling. This, I mean, you know, EW was an early champion of American Fiction, and I am so glad to see them getting some attention. And I think Sterling in particular, his role is so complex and could be really caricature. And I thought that he did a really fantastic job of playing all of that in a very nuanced way. And also like not having a ton of screen time,
right.
You know, it's like Robert De Niro, I would, you know, I discussed Lily being supporting. Robert is really the co-lead. I mean, you know, it's a Chicago situation is the one I always go back to. It's it's the fact that the two leads were male in this. And so, you know, obviously, I understand Leo going for lead and De Niro going for, mm-hmm. for supporting, but, and Downey Jr. too is like a huge, huge part of that movie. In a way that I think the rest of these are actually supporting actors. And sometimes, you know, size of the part does come in to play unless you're Judi Dench, right. who was very deserving, but again, you know, yes. like you would pop in like America Ferrera pops in. I mean, her character was in more of it, but like really like having a mm-hmm. one moment that it's all about. So I'm thrilled for Sterling, I guess is my takeaway here.
Yeah. I mean, he's so good in it. Like you said, not in it long, but, he makes the most of his time. And I'm going to get more Joey Nolfi's thoughts on this on the Awarders podcast later in the week. But he does have, I guess, quote unquote theory, we'll call it, is that Sterling's nomination here does still kind of go to show that playing a gay character goes a long way with Academy voters. It's in that category along with, you know, physical transformations and that kind of thing. What are your feelings on that in this case?
I mean, I think it's really, I mean, all of this is just so subjective. It's hard to dive into that because it's at the end of the day, these awards, I think ultimately should make you, like the people should make you feel something and they can make you laugh. They can make you cry. They could do that by being a total CGI character, or they could do that by being themselves, or they could do that with a bunch of prosthetics. Sometimes I think it's harder when you're doing it under all that sort of stuff. But beyond that, it really at the end of the day to me should be about like, are you effective at making me feel something, and does it feel authentic? And that could be, again, it could help or hurt you.
Yeah. You brought up, we've been talking about Lily Gladstone and Robert De Niro. I do also want to note, though, that Leonardo DiCaprio, who's a lead contender for this film, did not get nominated here. He also, though, by the way, did not get a SAG nomination or a BAFTA nomination. So it's not completely a surprise that he's not on this list. But he is also fantastic in the film, and you know, he was getting some precursor nominations and honors. So we did include him as a snub here. Also, really interesting that the Killers of the Flower Moon script, written by Martin Scorsese and Eric Roth, did not get nominated in the adapted screenplay category. Especially given that the film got a Best Picture nomination, and you know. It's so funny the way these things shake out sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's tough, particularly with Killers of the Flower Moon, and I was about to say this, and then was like, oh, but obviously Oppenheimer's runtime is quite significant as well. But Oppenheimer, I think, chugs along at a faster clip. And I do wonder how much Killers of the Flower Moon maybe was. Not dinged, because obviously it got nominations, but I do wonder if there wasn't just a little bit of exhaustion with the runtime of that film that could have contributed to it not getting as many nominations as we thought it might.
Right. Yeah, completely fair on that point. I guess I also thought to a certain extent that it was going to get in there because, you know, there was so much conversation about the script of this film, which really deviated from the book that it was based on, the book focusing more on the FBI. And this screenplay, though, focusing more on the Osage people and what was being done to them, granted, it still wasn't, the story wasn't specifically about them and their lives, but more so what these people were doing to them. Hey, that was such an interesting one, and I wasn't sure where it was going to go, but I felt like, given that, you know, we knew Marty was going to get nominated, we knew the film was going to be nominated, that it also just felt like it made sense that the screenplay would get nominated. Alas, the writers said otherwise. You did mention Fantasia Barrino being snubbed for The Color Purple, which is, I know when you and I saw the film, my gosh, I keep forgetting when it was. It was late May, early June. We were like, oh, there's an Oscar nominee, another Oscar nominee from American Idol. And alas, that one also did not happen. By the way, I want to mention another director snub, Alexander Payne for The Holdovers. I'm quite surprised by.
Yeah, I mean, and it still could happen, but as The Holdovers was continuing to do well, there was a moment I thought there could be an upswell, and there still could be, that it could take Best Picture. I think Oppenheimer is the front runner for sure, but I really felt like there's just been this like upswell for Holdovers as well as Poor Things. But I thought Holdovers maybe had the momentum to maybe overtake Oppenheimer. But the lack of that nomination makes me feel a little otherwise now, which is unfortunate because I think he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I'm with you. There was a time in all the run up to all of this that, like I was saying, you know, you hear people around town talking about, look, Sterling K. Brown, have you seen that performance? And I would hear people say the same kind of thing about The Holdovers. And I was like, oh, are we going to have a situation here on the big day when, you know, that Best Picture envelope is announced or opened and there's a different movie listed there that's not Oppenheimer. By the way, let's talk about that for Best Picture. What right now do you think could be the upset in the category?
Well, I mean, like I said, I think Holdovers could take it. I think Holdovers and Poor Things have the best chance, but I could also see there being an upswell of support for Barbie in response to Greta and Margot not getting nominations in directing and Best Actress. So I could see there being this kind of how could you not do that? So I'm voting for that just to make sure that they get up on that stage. So I think as much as I hate that Greta and Margot didn't get nominated, I think it actually gives them a better shot at Best Picture. So maybe ultimately it gets them an Oscar anyway.
No, that's a really interesting theory. And honestly, I could see people doing that. Also worth mentioning, Greta did get in for best adapted screenplay. This was a bit of a kind of a controversy very early in the season. Joey Nofi and I on the Awardist podcast, we were talking about some early predictions, and we said that film for adapted screenplay, and we were very kindly corrected by the folks behind that film saying, actually, it's been submitted for original screenplay. We're like, oh, interesting. But fine. And then, you know, a few weeks ago, the announcement came through that it has been moved to adapted screenplay because it is based on existing IP, but there are no actual stories surrounding Barbie that it's adapted from. So that was a bit of a tricky and divisive one. People definitely had some thoughts there. Do you think it's in the right category?
It shocked me that it not shocked me. I wasn't like gasping, but it was a surprise to me that it wasn't considered an original script. I thought it was this like weird, almost like not that adapted screenplays are easier to do, but I think it did a disservice to, yes, the character of Barbie existed, but like, not like this in any way, shape, or form. I thought it kind of didn't give credit to the creativity of putting that script together. And it's not the only film that's ever had that situation where like it's been based on a book, but they completely change everything about it, you know, that sort of thing. To me, it was a little bit of a ding to the work that was done in writing that script.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of original, let's talk about quickly here the best original song category, because two songs from Barbie did get in, which, if my research serves me correctly, no more than two songs from a film can be nominated. The two from this one are The Expected Ones, I'm Just Ken, as well as What Was I Made For? Patrick, I know you were at the Critics' Choice Awards, and I've heard some others talking about the fact that I'm Just Ken, which won at CCAs, could take the win from the expected winners, Billie Eilish and Phineas. Were you getting that kind of vibe as well?
I think it kind of like broke the seal is how I put it of, I think everyone kept like, there kept being this narrative of like, oh, like, will there be an upset? Will there be an upset? And I think the critics choice, I think the critics almost like gave permission for that to happen now. I think it was one of those things where like, oh yeah, cause it is a sillier song and all of that, but it also is very character developing.
Yes.
And, you know, I also appreciate that it is a song that's actually like performed in the movie. Right. Which as a musical fan, I'm always, I always enjoy like getting something that's at the forefront. What Was I Made For is perfectly used in the film as well. You know, it's not a situation where like, it's a song that just plays over the beginning of the credits sort of situation at all. So I'm not discrediting it, but you know, there's a lot going for I'm Just Ken. And I think Ryan Gosling becoming a meme in his reaction to the win at the Critics' Choice Awards doesn't hurt matters. Again, I often think about the similar to a political campaign. Like it is those like moments that you kind of permeate beyond the voting body that just like gets your name in there. And I think that was certainly something that happened there. So it's similar to America Ferrera. I think he is helping that case for sure. I also just love that Flamin' Hot has come in. You know, the other nominees are The Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot, music and lyrics by Diane Warren. We have I'm Just Ken. It Never Went Away from American Symphony, music and lyrics by John Batiste and Dan Wilson. I'm going to say this incorrectly, I am sure. But the translation is A Song for My People from Killers of the Flower Moon, music and lyrics by Scott George. And then What Was I Made For, as you mentioned, by Billie Eilish and Phineas O'Connell. I just, for all of the discourse on Flaming Hot, Diane Warren is a mainstay in this category. So good, happy for her.
Yeah, it's her 392nd nomination or something like that. No, really, like 14th, I believe, and she has the honorary win as well. All right, well, I'm kind of scrolling the nominations list here again quickly, but I feel like we've covered most of this. Any closing thoughts from you, Patrick?
Again, as I started, it is just a weird list, and that's not to discredit any of the nominees. I think everyone here was very deserving. But it is just not at all what we were expecting to be talking about today. Even in the, like, I was in a meeting today with some people from our sister brand at People, and we were discussing it, and you know, we were expecting there to be some big movies with some smaller movies, but the bigger movies that got in weren't the bigger movies we were expecting, and the smaller movies that got in weren't the smaller movies we were expecting. So it wasn't even that we thought it was going to be like a whole blockbuster year or a whole like smaller film year. The mix is still similar to what we thought. It's just like, yeah, there's just been, I think there was, to me, there was more support for Naiad than I was expecting. There was less support for Killers of the Flower Moon and Barbie than I was expecting. It was like everyone took the names and kind of put them in a blender, and what came out was completely different smoothie than I was expecting.
Yeah, that is for sure. Well, we of course have so much coverage at EW.com that folks can check out. We spoke with Lily Gladstone this morning, as well as America Ferrera, about their nominations, but also the snubs for people, you know, on their films. We have that, and a look at just other historic nominations. Really, be sure to check out our snubs and surprises to get some really full analysis on all of those as well. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us for now, because Patrick, we gotta head to the airport. Ugh,
God, between this and squeezing an Emmys in the middle of awards of this, beginning of the year award season, like the entertainment industry is trying to kill us, Jared, but we will survive. We will persevere.
We'll survive. We are not going to be Jennifer Coolidge and Tanya on the White Lotus. We will get off the boat safely. All right, folks. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and be sure to check us out, like I said, EW.com, as well as the Awardist podcast. Thanks for joining us, and see you soon, Patrick.
See you soon.
This episode of The Awardist is hosted and produced by Jared Hall and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.